This is a One Voice podcast. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Jake Holly, and you are listening to the fourth ever episode of what we're now calling Shout Out with One Voice. That's right, we've rebranded. We are now called Shout Out with One Voice. Tell your friends. I'm joined by an author, and she's taken a quite a unique approach to writing history novels. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
My name is Adina Malcolm, and as Jake mentioned, I am writing historical novels. Most of my novels have been about my ancestors.
Your ancestors. I think that's really cool how you've written, taken a time period, and then devoted that story to someone that is related to you. So how would you walk us through that process? How do you research your ancestors? How do you find out who they are? And why did you decide to take that approach with your writing?
Well, I think I'll start with the last question, why I started writing about my ancestors. About 20 years ago, I was trying to write a book from a point of view of an Indigenous person, a Métis. And about halfway through, I realized that it wasn't my story to tell. And I thought, no, this is for Indigenous people to tell their own story. And I'm so glad in the last 20 years that they've started to do that. So it was sort of before they talked about cultural appropriation. But when I was doing it, about the same time, I was doing some genealogical research. And I discovered some interesting stories in my family tree. And I said, oh, that's my story. Those are my cultural stories. And I really wanted to write about those stories. So that's how I got started doing it. And of course, they had to be stories that really captured my attention. The first books that I wrote were about John Dean and his wife, Susan Kirk. And they were back in the 1700s. And I discovered a lot of the stories online, actually. There was a story that had been passed down from generation to generation and written down, and it was online about John Dean. He was a gardener. And he was a gardener on Susan Kirk's estate and her family estate. And of course, they fell in love and they eloped, and she was cut off from her family. So I thought that was kind of an interesting story, and I started to write. They moved around a lot. They lived in England, then they lived in Scotland, they lived in Northern Ireland, and they finally ended up in Nova Scotia. And I've written a novel for each one of those places. The first one is about the romance when they first met. So a lot of that was all invented because really don't know that story. But then the second book was about their story in Scotland. And I found a really interesting piece of information. He was a gardener at a place called Ellen Castle, which still exists, or the ruins of the castle are still there. When he was the gardener, the castle was owned by the Earl of Aberdeen, and he'd set up his mistress's children in the castle. So I thought that would be a really interesting story to tell, and that was the second novel. And the third novel, they moved to Northern Ireland, and in the 1890s, there was the troubles. There were real troubles going on. There was a rebellion and everything, and the English were hated. And so they left Northern Ireland, and they were on a ship going to the United States, but it was boarded by the British, and they were taken to Nova Scotia, and that's where they ended up. And in the 1790s, it was a real wild place. So the fourth book is about their settlement in Nova Scotia.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is a crazy story. But that was four books. But the next book I wrote was about an ancestor about the same time. His name was Michael Eisen. And again, I found information online. In the story, it said that Michael Eisen, the family Bible records that Michael Eisen married for the third time at the age of 101. And then died of his excesses at the age of 103.
Oh, man.
I thought, wow, that's a book that has to be written.
That's
a story for sure. And it really was a fascinating story. He was born in Germany, and he became part of an emigration plan to come to Nova Scotia, which had just been cleared of Acadians at the time. And there were about 400 of them from what is now Germany, but at the time it wasn't a separate country. And they got as far as London, and then the organizer of the emigration absconded with their money, and they were abandoned there. They couldn't speak English. They were living in a field, and a German minister started writing to the newspapers about their plight, and they set up a GoFundMe in coffee houses and banks.
Okay.
So it's almost like today. And they raised a lot of money. In fact, the king, who was George III, also gave money to them. He ended up giving them land in South Carolina.
Wow.
Michael Eisen ended up in South Carolina. And 10 years later, the American Revolution broke out. He fought for the king because the king had given him land. Everything he owned, he
owed to the king.
He owed to the king. So, he was a loyalist.
Yeah.
But, of course, he lost. And then he ended up in Nova Scotia, which was ironically where he was going in the first place. And he was given some land there at a place called Ship Harbor. That's when he married for the third time. He married a woman of about 30 years old. I think he was looking for a nurse, probably.
And she was probably looking for a payday or
something. Yeah, exactly. Knows, right? Exactly. Although I don't think his family was particularly happy about that.
No, I can imagine.
But anyway, that made it, I thought that would be a really good novel. So that was The Loyalist. And so so that was how I got started doing historical novels and why I started writing about the ancestors, because they were good stories.
That's a really cool story. 101, married for the third time. And I think that character speaks truth of the whole saying, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey, right? Because he was going to Nova Scotia anyways. He ended up there, and he had fighting a war before that?
Yeah.
Big journey.
Oh, yeah, big journey.
Big journey.
Yeah, and I find the most interesting people are the people who take that risk and leave everything behind and go to another country. You know, it's a settler's story, but they are interesting people, and they're not usually coming in order to displace the native people. They're coming to better their lives, to have a better future for themselves and their family.
That bodes well for me, actually, because I kind of did a similar thing. I used to live in Ontario from Kingston, and I kind of just dropped everything, and I moved to here, Victoria, BC, just to start a whole new life. It's worked out pretty well, but it's good to know that makes me interesting. So you write notoriously about history and different time periods. That's what your books are about. Why did you go that direction as opposed to like fantasy or romance or a sci-fi?
That's a really good question because I read it. I mean, I read everything. I love reading. I've always loved reading. And when you read a book, I find what you want to do is you want to be in a new place, a new time, a different life, a different, you know, experience. Mm-hmm. And fantasy does that really, really well. But fantasy, you have to make up a whole world, and that gets really complicated. Whereas history, you're still in a different world. You're in a different time. Everything's different.
Yeah, a lot of things work differently, right?
Yeah, but you can find out. You can do research and find out about it. And I've always loved history, so I think that's why I went that way.
Right on. Cool. So why don't you take us to the beginning? What made you want to start writing? What inspired you to take on that path?
Like I said, I've always loved reading, and when I was a kid, I used to read a lot. And I think the book that really made me want to be a writer was Little Women by Louisa May Alcott, because the main character was a writer, and I just wanted to be a writer from that moment on. And it's taken me a long time to get back to that, but it's always been there that I wanted to do that. So that's what got me started, I guess.
Cool. So let's see. You were born in Victoria. In the West Coast, or was it Victoria?
Victoria.
You were born in Victoria, right on. And you lived most of your life in Quebec and that surrounding area, right?
Well, I lived in Quebec for 16 years, and then I moved to Edmonton for another 16 years.
All right, and then you moved back here.
Yeah.
What brought you back?
Okay. There's been a tension in my life, and it's in a lot of my books as well, between wanting to travel, to go someplace else, right? I guess that's what why I like reading too, because someplace else.
Yeah. A lot of people can relate to that, I think.
Yeah. But on the other hand, there's another tension of always, when I do go, I always want to go home. So there's a tension there that I want to go home, I want to leave, I want to go home. So as long as I was living away, I wanted to come back. I really did. I missed the ocean, I missed the mountains. I've been coming home all the time that I've been away, if you will.
Yeah, totally. No, I know what you mean. Every time I go visit my family back in Ontario, about a weekend, I'm like, okay, it's time to see some mountains. I miss the oceans, you know, the salt and the water and all that.
Yeah.
I miss whales. I go whale watching a lot. Like, mm-hmm. If I'm away from them too long, then...
Yeah, I love whale watching too. That's really great.
A lot of fun. So we've already talked about a couple of the ancestors, John and Michael. Mm-hmm. Was there anyone else that you have written about?
No, those are the only ones the only ancestors I've written about. And the book that I've got that The most recent book is set in Victoria. And again, it's a settler's story because I wanted to, as I said, I really love this place and I wanted to talk about the early settlement of Victoria. My own ancestors came here in the 1890s. So I went to 1852 because that's really about the very beginning of Victoria. And so the latest book is about the settlement of Victoria, the first 40, 50 years.
Right on. Cool. You say that you take a well-researched approach to writing a new book.
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk us through your research process? Like, do you go to Ancestry.com or anything like that?
Well, for the ancestors, yeah.
Yeah.
But for this latest book, it's just, well, yeah, first of all, it's so great for historical writers these days to have, the internet at your fingertips. You can find out so much information there. And of course, that's what I do. I mean, all the time when you're writing and suddenly you realize, oh, I don't know that. What would they have eaten for breakfast or whatever?
Yeah.
And you can find out a lot of times. But that has its limits too. And I go to libraries and I like to do research in archives and things. And finding books or diaries of people who lived at the time really, really is helpful because you can find out. You know, you don't realize what you don't know until you start to write and you say, okay, they got up, what do they do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have a bathroom, where do they go?
For sure.
Not that you want to put all that in
It's not a detail that people first go to.
Yeah.
But it's a detail that people, yeah.
And then when you're researching, you find out all these interesting things that happened, you know, and you think, oh, I got to put that in. Oh, that's a great detail. And, you know, that kind of thing. So it really gives you inspiration too, to do that, to do the research.
That's cool.
But I don't thoroughly research before I get started. Sometimes I go back and forth.
Okay, so you read it, write a couple chapters, then go back to some research and stuff like that.
Yeah, something like that. Some research at the beginning, and then some writing, and then go. Then you realize, oh, I need to know more about that, so you go back and do some research. So.
Do you ever find yourself, like, as you're writing or doing research, do you ever find yourself wishing you can go back to that time just to see what it's like?
Yeah, I think so. It is really hard. So one of the things that I found really difficult about historical writing is there really is a different mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I don't really like it when I'm reading a book where it's supposed to be set in the past and yet the people are thinking like they're in especially the main characters thinking like they're in the 21st century or something. They're all politically correct and they know everything. I mean, that doesn't ring true to me, but it's really hard to get find that balance where, because you don't want them to have a hate on for another race or for the native people or something like that, because that'll lose your 21st century audience.
Yeah.
So you really have to walk a fine line there.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Yeah. That's one of the difficulties.
Yeah. So you mentioned your new book. It's called House of Crows, right?
Yeah.
Is that one, and this one's inspired by another ancestor as well?
No, this is the one that's set in Victoria.
Right.
And actually, the inspiration for the book, I was visiting Point Ellis House. I don't know if you've ever been there.
Not yet, no.
It's really cool when it opens up again. You should go see it. It's because it's a house that was about 1860 to 1890. The family that started living there in the 1890s, the O'Reilly family, they owned it up until about 1970s anyway, and they kept it the way it was. I mean, it's not like they've recreated the past there. That past, the family lived in it. So it's really cool to go and actually see the way it was at the time. Anyway, I was going through the house and there was a story about the daughter who in the 1890s who was engaged to marry a naval officer at Esquimalt, and he was a son of an earl, and she was going to move to England. And she decided that she couldn't leave. She couldn't leave her family. She couldn't leave Victoria. She didn't want to go. And I right away, I don't know why, but I thought of this character, a maid who was working for her, who said, well, that's totally crazy, because this maid really wanted to travel and she really wanted to better herself. And she couldn't understand why someone wouldn't leave Victoria, because... So it was kind of like my wanderlust in my head there, too. So that's the way the story started.
Right on.
Yeah.
And why the title House of Crows?
That came out of the daughter there. She was living with her mother and her grandmother. They were both widows, and they wore black. And she was a maid. She wore a black skirt, white blouse. She was wearing a black uniform, too.
Mm-hmm.
As a kind of a joke, the daughter called their house the House of Crows.
Oh, okay, right on.
Yeah.
Cool. I want to know what your advice would be to someone who is thinking about trying writing, is in the middle of writing, If you could give one piece of advice to them, what would it be?
Don't quit your day job.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I mean, unless you got a bestseller.
Yeah. I mean, unless you've got to, yeah, of course.
I mean, I don't want to be discouraging, but really it is, there isn't a lot of money in writing unless you are Stephen King or you've got a blockbuster, you know, somehow. And I mean, great. If you do, go for it. But I mean, I don't think there's not too much historical fiction that is a blockbuster. There's a few. There's Patrick O'Brien. There's Diana Gabaldon. But she's got this great. She had this great idea of sort of mixing fantasy and historical fiction, where she takes a character from the 20th century, puts them in the past. They walk through the stones and they're in the past suddenly. And that is cool because you've avoided the problem of having, a backward thinking people, if you will.
Yeah.
Main character.
That makes sense. That reminds me of a movie I saw years ago when I was a kid. These researchers or scientists or whatever, they found a way to time travel and they transported 4 or 5 modern day people back into like medieval times.
Yeah.
But then they got stuck there. One of them ended up becoming a historical king. I forget the name of the movie and it bugs me every time I think about it.
Yeah.
But that reminds me of that.
Yeah, yeah, it is a really interesting premise.
And yeah.
So if you've got a really great premise, or you think you might have a blockbuster, then you can, I don't know, look for a publisher, but the publishing business is a pretty tough one with these days.
Yeah, imagine like as that industry becomes more like glorified by movies and TV shows about writers and stuff like that, it's becoming a lot more saturated with people that want to try it out, right?
Yeah, and I think probably the younger generation maybe should just go to screenwriting or something like that right away. That's probably not a bad...
Yeah, now that there's streaming services like Netflix and Amazon Prime, these original shows, maybe screenwriting is a good way to go about it.
But things like e-publishing, that's a great way to start out too. When you've written a book, you can e-publish it. And in some ways, that circumvents the publishing industry because you get more for... back, you know what I mean? You make more money from that than you do from publishing books. Although people love to have books they can put in their hand.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for a good tangible book.
Yeah. And everybody does, but it's really expensive and the writer themselves doesn't get very much of that money. The booksellers and the distributors make more.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes.
Yeah.
So I'm a photographer. would you mind just kind of like dumbing down e-publishing for me? Is that just like publishing online?
Publishing online, basically. There's places like Amazon
that
you can get ebooks, right?
Oh, yeah. Actually, that makes sense.
Yeah, like if you got an e-reader. Like yeah, Kobo.
Kobo.
Kobo and Kindle.
What did I say? Kudo?
Kudo.
That's a phone company. Messed that up. See, this is how much I know.
But it's always a way to go. Even if you go by a regular publisher these days, they're going to e-publish too.
That makes sense, yeah.
Because, there's more money in that.
Okay.
It's easier. You don't have to pay for paper printing, all that kind of thing. Bookstores, you're going to circumvent all those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope bookstores don't go out of style, though, anytime soon.
Oh, I do, too. I mean, I love books. Except that they can take over your place.
Yeah, no, we've got to invest in some shelves, for sure. Like, we bought these. Nobody can see what we're talking about, but we bought some, these shelves just to store my books.
It's great to have books, but what's really great in Victoria is the Times Colonist book sale, because you get rid of your old books and get all kinds of free new books and stuff.
Oh, cool. So you're trading them.
Or not free. I think you pay for the books. I usually just get rid of my books.
Okay.
I don't get new books
there. Done with this. Read this 3 times. Goodbye. So who are your influences?
Well, I mentioned Louise May Alcott.
Yeah.
I also mentioned Diana Gabaldon. I think she's a great writer, but as a commercial success anyway. And I just read so much that I think every writer kind of influences me. Like, I even like Ursula Le Guin. I thought she's a great fantasy writer. There's just so many writers I could mention that I like, that have been an influence on me.
Right on. Have you heard of... Nicholas Eames yet?
No.
He's written my all-time favorite fantasy series. It's a series called The Band. The series is called The Band. Mm-hmm. So like The Band Part 1, The Band Part 2, and all that.
Yeah.
The first book was called Kings of the Wild, and it's a fantasy series, which you said is a little harder to write.
Yeah.
One of my favorite, every time I think of authors, he's one of the first ones that comes to my name, mm-hmm. or my mind, sorry. Mm-hmm. So if you like reading, you like fantasy novels, definitely check that one out. And that goes for everyone listening to this as well. Kings of the Wild and Bloody Rose, great books. Back to House of Crows, is that available to buy now, or is that coming out?
You know what? I'm waiting for the books to arrive. They were supposed to be here two days ago. Mm. And so hope, you know, mail's kind of slow these days. So I'm hoping it'll come next week because I want to do a launch on July 26th.
Okay.
Which is coming up pretty fast, unfortunately. But I'm going to do a co-launch. And I got to tell you this story. This is kind of interesting. I do Tai Chi, and I was at our Christmas party. We were in a restaurant, and I was sitting next to a new member who had been there for a few months. I hadn't talked to her, and we started talking, and it turned out I'm a writer. She's a writer. Mm-hmm. So I start talking. She's, what do you write? Historical fiction. Oh, really? And we start talking, and it turns out we both have a book coming out.
Oh, wow.
And we both, and it's both of the books are set in Point Ellis House.
Wow.
So we set up a book launch, a joint book launch in June at Point Ellis House. But of course, then COVID hit and we had to cancel it.
Yeah.
But Point Ellis House was really kind and they let us in, just the two of us with videographer. And we did, taped us reading our books, from our books. So in our book launch, we're going to do a joint online book launch on July 26th. And in the book launch, we're going to show the videos that were taped. Nice. And we're going to put them on YouTube as well.
I can't wait to see them.
Yeah. So we're kind of excited about that. And it's, her book is called Trappings, and it's set, in, like I said, in Point Ellis House, but it's about 30 years before mine, in the 1860s. So it's a previous owners, the original owners of the house. And it's a really interesting story, too. So it was such a huge coincidence. I mean, really, what could you do with that?
Yeah.
I think that maybe if next year, if it opens up again and we can do it, maybe we'll again go back there and have a joint book live book launch. Because there's nothing better than a live book launch for a writer. Because you sell more books than any other time.
I can imagine. I will probably be there, actually. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, because these days it's... you do have to do it virtually. Even these books, I'll do a virtual book launch online. But how do people get the books? You know, they have to take another step, and order it from either my publisher, from me, or from maybe from Isla Spotlight when you got launched. But that takes another step, and so it's not quite as easy for people to buy a book, and it's not just like that they're going to do it. And then it's another step for the writer too, because you got to mail the book or the publisher has to mail the book and pay for postage.
Which is probably another reason that e-books and e-reading is so popular.
It is.
Once you hit that buy button, it's in your hands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I do that. Because I run out of bookshelf space. So,
and pretty soon you're going to run out of space on your tablets and then you have to buy a new tablet.
They've only got a shelf life of a couple of years anyway, then they start acting up and you got to get another e-reader, but still I think they hold a lot of books, so it'll be a while before they run out of space.
Fair enough. Cool. So where can anyone buy your books? You said that you're gonna launch a few of them on Isla Spotlight, which is coming up, our platform, in August, so listen for that. Selfless plug there, don't mind me. Where else?
My publisher is called Three Ocean Press.
Three Ocean Press.
Yeah, and they're out of Vancouver, and so you can order from the publisher or you can order from me personally. So I have a website. It's just my first name, adina.com. But that's spelled E-D-E-A-N-A. And it's an unusual spelling because the middle part of it, Dean, D-E-A-N, is my mother's maiden name.
Oh, well.
And the books that I wrote about John Dean, that's where it comes from.
Everything's coming together.
Yeah.
That's cool. Awesome. I had a blast talking with you today. Thanks for coming out.
I enjoyed it too. Thanks a lot.
Glad to hear it. All right. Everyone, thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next one.